Amen. Well, and let's just say officially, good morning to everybody again.
Well, good morning.
And especially you Orthodox people, you know, this is your Easter today. David Fundak, did you realize your Easter is today?
No.
Is he no. Orthodox?
Yeah. Today is the Orthodox Easter. Apparently, Easter Bunny isn't part of it, I guess.
Yeah, who knows?
And they stretch it out another week, make more money.
Well, David, check your ethnic background. You are probably more closer to the Orthodox than any of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Being from that lovely country of Croatia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So closer to the Orthodox center of Christianity, which is now Istanbul, or was, until the Muslims retook it. So anyway, a little bit of trivia there. that isn't our need to be our conversation though. So, but what I was starting to say, the fresh insights from the book of Revelation, Ephesians, not Revelation, but Ephesians. I've never seen some of this stuff before. It's amazing what you can see reading a different translation. It's amazing. Anyway, he uses the word in Ephesians, what is it, 3, chapter 4, he's talking about the grace given to prophets and evangelists and pastors, teachers toward the adjusting of the saints. Adjusting, that's not a word that I had seen before. Who needs adjusting here this morning?
Well, isn't that where all the guilt and shame comes in, to adjust the congregation?
Can you get the verse again?
This is a concordant literal New Testament, and this is Ephesians 4:12. And he's talking about Christ has given grace to certain people to be prophets, evangelists, pastors, teacher, toward, and the English would say for, and I think the English says, the other translations say for the building. He's saying toward the adjusting of the saints for the work of dispensing. So I like that term. All of us are under some form or another of adjustment so that we better represent who we really are. Without each other, we don't get the benefit of being formed, or that is, as you go to later on into that same chapter, to become who we really are, a mature man to the measure of the stature of the complement of the Christ. How do you really know who you are unless somebody else is coming alongside and helping adjust you? I know I need adjusting.
Well, that's what, isn't that what your wife is for?
David, you took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, yes, constant adjusting. Yeah, so we already are Christ. But it's interesting that Paul, how he speaks it here, we all are needing to, that is, mature or grow into who we already are. We already are carrying the image, and we already, Jesus is us. We live as Christ, but we don't know it. And we need each other, as it were, the kind of the mirrors and the reflections back onto us, helping us suggest, oh, okay, that's really not Christ. That's really not who I am. And that's the beauty of the body.
That's a very interesting, actually, passage all the way through verse 14.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the way it's written, mm-hmm, in the Concordance Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it is quite a mouthful.
Oh,
quite a picture of what we're supposed to be striving for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unity of the faith, the realization of the Son of God. You can take that a couple of ways, but to the mature man, to the measure of the stature of the complement of the Christ. You realize in this translation, Paul was very wordy. He uses phrases, he's redundant many, many times. He has certain phrases that he really loves, and this is one of them, the complement to the stature of the complement of the Christ. If the English, I think your other translations say, to the measure of the fullness.
You know, it's interesting as you continue on how this verse really speaks into what's going on today. Mm. Because it says, as you mentioned, to the measure of the stature of the complements of Christ, that we may by no means still be minors, surging hither and thither and being carried away by every wind of teaching, by human caprice, by craftiness, with the view into the system, systemizationing of the deception. And that's exactly what they're trying to do in our schools today. That's exactly what they're trying to do in our society today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Interesting choice of words by this translator, this author. Craftiness with a view to the systemizing, I should say, of the deception.
Yeah.
Wow. Hmm. So there's deception and then there's systemized deception.
What does he mean by the deception, though?
What would that be? There's a falsehood out there, the narrative that's out there that we can be what we want to be, and we can choose our identity, we can choose who we think we should be, all that.
You know, when you compare it to today's society, how there's a group of people who think that we should allow minors, I mean, even preteen children, to go through operations that will change their sex, that is irreversible in a lot of cases, and will have absolutely devastating effects on the children as they grow older. You know, this is the deception that this group is trying to put on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you can also look at other aspects of today's society that are promoting the benefits of communism and socialism, mm-hmm. without promoting the downside to both. So I think all of this leads into what you were asking, Beth, about the deception. There's so much of that going on today that it's almost overwhelming.
Yeah. So what do you think Paul would have meant as he was writing this?
Yeah, because that's just...
yeah, of the deception. We have the application in today's society. We know, as you say, Dave, what's going on in our culture. But in Paul's day, I wonder if that was the same thing.
Well, would he have been referring to the deception of the gospel? Because you had the agnostics, you had Jewish groups that were professing Jesus Christ, but trying to take everything back to the law.
Mm-hmm.
So you had several deceptions going on about basically about the gospel and what mm-hmm. Paul was preaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a large part of it. Where is he saying here? He's talking about people being grounded. There is a in later in that same chapter, Look at 4:22. As regards your former behavior, the old humanity, which is corrupted in accord with its seductive desires, yet to be rejuvenated in the spirit of your mind. So something was going on in mankind being deceived or having another view of themselves. Wherefore, verse 25, wherefore, putting off the false, let each be speaking the truth with his associates. There was evidently in Paul's mind, there was a false narrative and there was truth. And the false narrative, I think, Dave, you've spoken to it, was systemized into religious teaching, whatever, if it was Jewish, whether it was Gnosticism, whatever it was, there was all kinds of systemizations.
That's how he opens Galatians with that message about why are you being deceived and led away from what I've been teaching you by these other teachings.
Yeah. He feels very strongly that he's been given the revelation of the truth that's been hidden. In the third chapter, he talks about that. And how that for generations, humanity has been taken up by that deception. And he was there to bring a new evangel, a new message of the secret, which was Christ in us.
Well, even to some extent, outside of the, if you look just inside the Jewish faith itself, because Paul's message, as he states often, was first to the Jew. Okay, and he was trying to help them understand that Jesus was the fulfillment of the Jewish faith. But the Jews were wanting to hold on to the old ways, all the laws, all the sacrifices, all the rituals. When Paul was saying, hey, look, that's all done away with now. And as I mentioned earlier, you had some Jews who claimed to be followers of Christ, but they were trying to play both sides by holding on to a lot of the laws and the rituals, yet claiming to be following Christ. So it's kind of like they were getting hammered from both sides, both from the Jewish side as well as from the Gentile side.
But it leads me to believe what do I as an individual and what do we have a responsibility to each other for when there's deception, when there's particularly related to the gospel or to Jesus? What's our responsibility to each other?
I think as I said earlier, there's a constant adjusting that needs to go on because we are so prone to fall back into the old humanity, the old narrative, the corrupted or the false idea of our being, our place in the universe. And it goes back, I believe, to the very difference between the two trees. And of course, the tree of life is the true essence of who we are. We're tied to the life of God. His breath lives in us. The other tree created a narrative of separation, that God is distant from us. And we live on this earth or in this universe as an independent being. And then if we're an independent being, that lays the foundation for all kinds of different ways that we begin to perceive ourselves. And the deception stays firm in our life until suddenly our eyes are open, we see the truth. So do you, I guess you could say it this way. Do you feel independent of God or in union with God? That's the simplest way of describing the deception.
Well, for me, both are true. I mean, I do as we're talking and as I reflect during the week, but I also, there's periods of time when that's not forefront in my mind. Mm-hmm. And so what to do about that? Mm-hmm. You know? And I mean, I'm really asking the question, what is our responsibility mm-hmm. to each other? Mm-hmm. Or how do we perform in, individually for the good of for each other?
A clue to that, Arnold, might mm-hmm. be in chapter 3, where he's talking about our words. Let no tainted word at all be issuing out of your mouth, but if any is good toward needful edification, that it may be giving grace to those hearing.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
How do we give grace to each other? What are the words of grace? And if we follow on, not so much here, but like in the book of Galatians, as David mentioned, our efforts are all about restoring the proper image, the proper narrative in our minds, in our hearts. And that narrative is, I am one with God. I'm not an independent creature. That God and I exist together. We're symorphosed together.
And I think part of your answer also, Arnold, if we is back in Ephesians, where mm-hmm. Dennis was reading before, because Paul's talking about in verse 12, towards the adjusting of saints, the work of dispensing for the building or for the upbuilding of the body of Christ. Okay, so our responsibility, I think, to each other is to continue sharing the truth, sharing thoughts, Arnold, sharing questions, because how are we going to get to the truth without questions? And how are we going to build each other up without questions? So I think, you know, and I think it's even referred to in Galatians is about the building of the up of the body, being together, worshiping together, praising together, everything that leads to keeping our focus on Christ.
It's communion with people, with others.
Absolutely, yeah.
But right now, it's not being out there by ourselves, which is kind of what's happening, I feel.
Yeah, we've mentioned this in previous conversations, is that how so many people, now that they're disaffected or disconnected from their religious bodies, their religious institutions, wandering out there, where are they having the opportunity to hear the truth or this adjusting with each other, or as you say, David, the communion, the fellowship? How are they getting that? And it's so easy for us when we're not in that relationship, in that connection, to default, I believe, and start to succumb to the accusations and the narrative that the enemy pounds into our heads. Scott just wrote this morning a great illustration of that. He's mentioned this before, but this morning he did a good job, I believe, with writing how listening to Satan, the accusations that Satan pours into his head of who he, you know, what's the false idea? Insecure, afraid of people. That's not from God. So he needs to hear the word from others that, no, Scott, that's not who you are. You are Christ. You are confident. You have the strength. You have the inner man, you have the truth, all these things we need to hear from one another. Now, we can go to scriptures and hear it, but there's I believe there's only so much power in the reading the word. The real power of it comes as we hear that word spoken to us or by our own mouths.
I think you're bordering on blasphemy here. only so much power in their word.
Call me out, brother.
No, I think you're right. There's something about reading the word versus hearing it from another faithful person. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I can go back to the words verbally spoken to me by people in Africa that had a tremendous impact that I may have never gotten out of just reading the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so there's so much truth in what you just said, Dennis, that you can read and read and read and read, but then somebody will come along and say something and all of a sudden the light will go on. Mm.
I agree, Dave. I've had many of those instances myself. And a lot of it I wish I would have written down and recorded somewhere, but nevertheless, they spoke into my heart. And, you know, and I knew in my spirit it was God.
Then there are times that you're talking to somebody. My friend Kevin and I, when we were heavy into our Bible studies and stuff, in talking back and forth every now and then, something would be said and it'd be, oh my gosh, look at the time. I got the time of this conversation to end. You know, some of it got a little too convicting, I guess. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no, it's gosh, the value of talking to people is underrated.
Absolutely. And who are you letting talk into your life or speak into your life, I should say?
Yeah.
That's so important. Many people have cut off others around them and don't appreciate what value they have in their life. Even people you would consider not your close friends. I know God speak to me through people who were not professing believers. Mm-hmm. They were actually, you know, heathen, if you would. Pagans. Gentiles.
a beautiful example of that is this friend of mine. I can't remember if he was ever married to the lady or not, but she was the mother of one of his children. And she was Wiccan.
A Wiccan?
Yeah.
Okay.
And she was on rough times, and he allowed her to stay with him for a little while. And they got into a bit of a tiff one day. And she looked at him and said, did you ever think that maybe you were supposed to be Jesus to me? He said, that's just... He said it just floored me.
So, I don't think anybody's ever said that to me.
So, people who don't believe can pretty much shut you up sometimes.
Exactly. Out of the mouth of... think she was a pagan. Crying out for the truth.
Yeah.
Ah, it's all around us, but how do we have ears to hear and acknowledgement of how God speaks? These sessions are so important because I enjoy this conversation. I don't know about you. This feeds me, edifies me. What I mean by that, does that pump me up? No, I'm not saying it that way. It's adjusting. I'm hearing things that correct an idea or a thought I have. That idea is bad. I just heard the confirmation or anything else. My slant or perspectives. How valuable are these conversations?
I find them incredibly encouraging as well, you know, because it makes me dig deeper. You know, especially when Beth throws out her hurt my head questions.
Yeah. We need that head hurt, Beth. Come on.
But David, see, you're open to that. You're open to hearing different things, as all you guys are. Are open to hearing it, which I think makes a big difference when someone speaks words.
Yeah, absolutely, because I meet too many people who buy into what the pastor said from the pulpit is the all in all.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're not going to be open and if you're not going to be asking questions, you're putting yourself in a tough place.
You're not supposed to, question the pastor's word there, David.
No, that whole environment is not set up for a dialogue. And and I believe it's in the dialogue environment where this is, this kind of thing is most effective. Now, can people hear God speaking to them from pastor? Yes, but I don't know that it has the same, it doesn't have the same impact. It makes me reevaluate all those years of preaching. I know people were saying, oh, that was so nice. I really needed that. But I often wondered, what is it you really, you know, let's talk about that. What is it that you heard? And can we talk about it further? See, that element was missing in the preaching environment.
Well, you know, and occasionally you can come across a pastor who will sit down with you and have a real discussion and be open to allowing the questions and even allowing himself to be questioned. Unfortunately, my experience has been few and far between. And in some cases, there was a limit on the questions you could ask.
Okay.
And the challenges you could throw out.
What do you know? Time's up.
You know, David, I don't know if you recall this. I gave you a list of questions several years ago that I had handed out to some pastors. I think the first question on the paper was, do we need the Bible?
Right.
And I'll tell you what, it set a couple of pastors on ear. I mean, they would, all they would do was chastise me on it. They would not even allow me to say what was behind the questions.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah.
There's people that believe in God that don't have a Bible.
Time
and framework of our activities didn't allow it, but I really enjoyed the environment of the Sunday morning Bible class environment. I had the thrill for years of having a Bible class under the auspices of my congregational pastorate. And so I had a time slot on first service. If you New Hopers remember this, there were two services. And so you alternated. You got to do involved or volunteer in a teaching or some kind of an environment in the classes, or you were in the worship service. Well, first service, I got to do 9 o'clock a Bible class. I loved that because I set up the environment such that if any time people had a question or had interjection, I had notes and you know, tried to move forward, but I was very open. And there would, wow, there were some times in which we just had to stop because someone asked a question that was really, really pertinent and had powerful application. So thankful for that. For that time, those opportunities for conversation.
So that feedback, when I was very much involved in Bible studies, either Julie and I together with other couples, or men's Bible group weekly type of get-togethers. Some were productive and some were not, but at least it brought me into a dialogue on a periodic, you know, at least a weekly basis, or in your case on a Sunday morning basis.
And to look at all those myriad ways that we connect with each other. It isn't just this environment where you're going to hear. I hope everyone understands that. This is viable and you're going to hear some things, but during the week, who are you connecting with and allowing them to speak into you? Not everything they say is going to ring, but there well could be some very valuable things that you will pick up.
Which does speak to the value of the institutionalized church, that was a place where that would typically happen.
Mm-hmm. Or right.
Be encouraged.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's the probably one of the greatest redeeming values of the institutional framework, mm-hmm. was that it actually intended those things to happen and otherwise may not have occurred. And people would have lost the opportunity, but we're very intentional about setting up all those environments that we could.
Sure. And then, you know, I personally got a lot more out of that type of environment, mm-hmm. you know, renewing my mind or at least expanding mm-hmm. my mind. Mm-hmm. That's what we talked about our mind.
Yep.
As opposed to sitting through a Dale Galloway service in the morning. I mean, sure. Yes, walk away feeling good and inspired, but where was that on Monday afternoon? You know.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
But someone that would pose a question or in a more of a small group, that would cause me to ponder on that and think maybe make a phone call or two.
You bet.
So, yeah, there's value in that.
You bet. So hopefully every one of us have those throughout the week. We have those little interjections, those times where we're connecting with someone and having conversation, maybe one person at least, or a couple people. And just having a good open conversation, questioning, asking, being willing to speak into each other. And that's a very careful grace. That's something I think we have to learn how to do. It's there in us. We just need to do it right. Words of grace. Who needs a word of grace this morning? Well, we already shared some of that. Arnold, you needed a word of grace this morning. Being discouraged. You got to feel down, rejected that things aren't going as you thought in the timing. So we're trying to encourage you by saying, hang in there, be confident.
Yep.
Understand God's will.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
But that also takes making such a priority to actually do the interaction mm-hmm. with others.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes time. I mean, we all have whatever time and however we prioritize that during, our weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, if something's not on my calendar, it doesn't. If something's on my calendar, it gets done, so to speak.
Yeah, you bring up a good point that I think is one of the huge obstacles to this, and I know I speak for my own life. If you aren't in my calendar, then I'm not so apt to be willing to spend a few moments to listen or to speak. I don't know if you. That's just my. That's the thing I need to continually be adjusted in, and so that's where I'm thankful. A month or so ago, there was some of you that were willing to say. Push back and say to me. And so I think in a large measure, all of us are in this, in some way or the other, we're in this compulsion that we have to accomplish what we're set out to do. And then we're not, as the old adage, willing to smell the roses because mm-hmm. we don't have time for that.
Yeah.
I don't have time to sit and hear somebody. I'll put decline on the phone call or, yeah, send it the message or whatever. Yeah, and then fail to get back to that message or that person.
Yeah. So it comes back to, for me, it comes back to the earlier question I posed, which is what's Paul trying to tell us about our responsibility to each other, mm-hmm. as a body, mm-hmm. Whoever we see, mm-hmm. as the other in our lives. Yeah. I believe back then it was a small community, mm-hmm. interacting with each other, somewhat akin to what we consider like a church body today, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, there were how many, who knows how many of these clusters and, mm-hmm. and little fellowships and communities all over the known world, Asia Minor primarily, at that time. He's speaking to Ephesians, and that just isn't one place. He's speaking to a group at Laodicea. There's a couple other little villages and towns that he had visited before. And so this letter he's writing is to a region, as you will, not only a church at their body at Ephesus, but all these people out through here, that region. So can you imagine? You don't have any Bible. There's no internet, no phone. Very little sacred literature out there at all, as far as anything Christian. You've got so much other Greek mythology and Greek literature and philosophy. Where are you going for any kind of narrative on Christ? So you've heard this Paul come through and preach. Now you understand there's something that he wrote and is being passed around in the communities.
Yeah. Wow. I've always often wondered, well, who got the letter from Paul in one of these clusters? And then was that the topic, of a discussion?
No Xerox, but can you imagine? Can I get that for about an hour? I want to write my own.
Yeah.
the other issue was the majority of people were illiterate.
That's true. Yeah.
They couldn't have read the letter anyway. But when you look at the history of the letter to Ephesians, it wasn't addressed to Ephesians.
Mm-hmm.
That was added years later.
Mm.
So the letter itself, as Dennis was saying, was addressed to a vast region, a vast number of churches. It was meant to be passed around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, unlike Romans, which was specifically addressed to the Romans and a couple of his other letters, but Ephesians had no address on it, and it was just meant for the entire church and for it to be passed around. So
when you were sitting, man, somebody would say, hey, I got a copy of Paul's letter, or I have the original. Can you imagine the interest? Let's hear it, read it. Let's get together and listen. And for the first time you heard these words spoken, the impact that would have had on those early believers on being nurtured and understanding who they are. That's the value of this letter. We're even using it today. We're using it to adjust.
To a pass around, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do we do, Arnold, in answer to your question? Well, again, going to his letter, 4:15, now being true in love, we should be making all grow into him who is the head. So that's all, it's everyone's job. We should be making all grow into him who is the head, Christ, out of whom the entire body, being articulated together and united through every assimilation of the supply and accord of the operation. He gets really wordy. You ever notice that with Paul?
Yeah.
The operation and measure of each one's part is making for the growth of the body, for the upbuilding of itself in love. Wow.
It's like Paul, come on, buddy. Get to the point here. What is the point?
That's all one sentence, guys. He is the king of run-ons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's our job. That's
our job, yeah.
He is conveying this truth that it's all of our responsibilities to encourage, edify, just however you hear it, us all to grow up into him, the head, grow up into the head. Mm-hmm. And recall that we talked about this. Headship does not mean top-down control. Headship is this intuitive, innate understanding of where, what's God doing, what is his will, and to swarm together without anybody telling us what we have to do, nobody teaching each other. You know, we don't need the teaching. We just need the edifying, the nurturing, the encouraging, the words that ring in our spirits. Oh, yeah, that's who I am. That's what I need to be doing.
So my job is not to lecture any one of you. It's to uplift and encourage and help move you along to oneness of Christ, so us together.
Exactly. And where we are now in the process of our relationship, I'll say, is that we should be able to say, we should be able to speak into each other at a level that others that would be new to us wouldn't understand, or what might take it offense. So I should be able to say, Arnold, are you sure? Or, hey, is this consistent, Arnold? Or just the, as David said, the question, the reminders, these are words of grace.
Yeah. I have a good friend of mine that he's always uplifting. And, you know, his first, anytime you'd have a conversation, it's so good to hear your voice or see your face. And what's happening? How's it going? You know, and that's kind of stuff always feels good and it is uplifting.
Yeah. You
know? Right?
Yes. Yeah. I need it. I hope all of us realize that we need that. What if either one of us, it becomes known that any one of us here is faltering in some area where participating in something that's not healthy or other injurious, or what's the best way to respond to that or to mention that to each other?
Well, let's just say hypothetically that you were starting to pick up on that I was becoming disillusioned in my marriage.
Okay. Yeah.
This is hypothetical.
Yes,
you know,
just hear that.
And it even come out that I'd been kind of getting together with somebody else, another woman that, you know, to get some comfort or advice or whatever.
Yeah.
But that came out. I mean, that kind of a thing, that's a blatant sort of a situation, which I would hope one of you would say, that's, you know, you're married and Julie, where does she fit? Mm-hmm. And uplifting that.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a very apropos example.
Yeah.
What is the best way you're going to hear or be open? How would be the best way we'd speak into you to adjust, help you adjust, or to restore you to the image, the truth?
Well, I tell you what wouldn't work is that for somebody to lecture me saying you're doing the wrong thing. I mean, mm-hmm. if you could nudge and encourage and have you thought about this and, mm-hmm. you know, that. And again, those uplifting words, encouraging words.
Let me ask you here. Something comes to mind, and I think it's apropos. Mm-hmm. In the New Testament, Jesus cites a process by which people are to discipline mm-hmm. each other in the church. You remember this? So if anyone has sinned, you go to the brother and, you know, if you have an offense, you could, remember, you go to that one and see if you can't reconcile. If you can't reconcile, then you take it to the leaders. And if you can't reconcile through the leaders, you take it to the whole church. And if nothing happens there, then you're kicked out. Now, I have a feeling, correct me, guys, I have a feeling, yes, that was a definite order, but I'm wondering if that hadn't come down through the Judaic process and Jesus was just reiterating. In this time in which we are realizing the secret of who we are, the mystery, can we apply that same thing?
Well, I think it depends on the situation.
Okay.
You know, in the case that Arnold pointed out, I don't know that that would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I actually called a pastor out on for not using that one time, and it pissed him off. Okay. Because he was, and it all tied back to when he had asked me to start a discipleship program in the works or in the church, and I made the mistake of quoting Wayne Jacobson.
Yeah.
Which, you know, actually, I didn't even say it was Wayne. Well, yeah, I guess I did after I read it. It was, you know, Dennis, you may recall the description of Jesus Christ in the book, yeah. So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best descriptions I've ever read of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. Anyway, I quoted that. It ticked him off. And he wouldn't even sit down and talk with me about it.
Mm.
And they said, I'm going to take it before the elders. And I said, well, that's not the way you do it.
Yeah.
I said, you and I meet one-on-one. If we don't come to agreement, then you, me, and somebody else, and then you take me to the elders. Yeah. He says, well, you can either go before the elders or leave the church. I said, well, I'll see you around. Have a nice day. You know, I actually bumped into him almost about a year ago. I bought a pistol from him.
Oh my!
Because he was working in a gun store with one of the people that attended his church.
David, that's karma. Well,
anyway,
no, the story thickens here.
No, I didn't shoot it, but
did he ever threaten you with it?
What was that?
Did he ever threaten you with a gun?
No. It was actually kind of comical because
it was a
Smith & Wesson 9mm with a laser on it.
Yeah, nice
and,
gun.
And when the owner of the gun store ordered it and brought it in, he looked at the owner and said, you're never going to sell this thing. And I walked in and I said, you wouldn't happen to have a Nothing. Where Jay goes, well, we got this one with a laser. I said, perfect. That's what I want.
Yeah. Could you add a light to it too?
Oh my goodness. How things come around.
Yeah.
That to me, again, God puts those things together. How many times I've come across people that I was at odds with? I go, oh man, not this person.
So Dave, that guy acknowledge what had happened between you guys years ago, or was it just kind of swept under the rug?
No, it wasn't even addressed. We just talked about guns mostly and kind of left it at that.
But he wasn't interested in where you were at the time. What?
No.
That's exactly what Paul was talking about.
Mm-hmm. So apparent. If we're not interested in being open to what God is doing, we shut off, say, no, my way is the only way. I hate to, in a way, bring this up, but I've told him many times, I'm listening to this chronicle of the death of Mars Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I find myself wondering, why do I keep listening to this, accepting that I'm fascinated in a way, you know, how institutional churches the problems, the things that get in and derail and become their own demise. And looking, it's to kind of looking back into my own experience and being aware, oh yeah, those things were there as well. And only by the grace of God were we able to exist as far as we were. But this we're talking about right now was so the death of Mars Hill, particularly Mark Driscoll, Pastor Mark Driscoll. He got to the place where he was not willing to listen to his own elders.
Yeah.
And he was so, I'm sorry, the phrase, so full of himself. And he would actually preach arrogantly saying, if you're not on this bus, we're going to run over you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the narrative that went on in that church. If you aren't loyal to us, and even as an elder, he fired two guys that were close buddies of his. He walked, I just fired two of our elders because they wouldn't get on board. Well, the truth of it was they were, but he was not willing to talk with them and to hear their concerns. And so he just blackballed them. And that began the real process of disintegration.
Can you pause this for a minute, the recording?
Yeah, let's do.
There was a time when the attack on men was seen as a very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, New Hope went through it.
Oh, yeah.
For a bit. And men were encouraged by it.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on it, I'm thinking, what the hell were we thinking? Mm-hmm. Because typically men don't respond to attacks like that in a positive way.
Yeah.
But for some reason, for a short period of time, I think it was only a couple of years, men responded to that attack on them as being positive and trying to encourage them to be better Christian men. But at some point they finally wised up and said, no, this isn't working.
Yeah. I think Dave, I think men got tired of the tone, mm-hmm. Tired of the narrative. Hey, get your act together. And most guys would say, haven't I been trying? And you're telling me I've got to do something different or whatever. Most men were so broken. They couldn't see themselves as putting it together, having the strength enough to change their lives on their own. That just wasn't in them. And so that message became overbearing, not encouraging at all.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I think Christianity and that narrative is past. It's behind us.
Yeah, and, I mean, you and I know and worked with a number of men mm-hmm. who were in that. They were just so beat up
mm-hmm.
that when this mm-hmm. preaching first came out, they responded favorably. But then after a while, it just beat them down more.
Yeah. Well, they hadn't heard anything like that. It was it was pretty novel, right? That Christian men could get into each other's faces.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Accountability. Oh, that was new. But soon we saw through it.
Yeah.
And it was not the way to motivate a man. And this is what we're getting at, guys. We're losing our time here, but how do we speak the words of adjusting, the words of grace to each other, not accusatory? Arnold, your question and your hypothetical case.
Mm-hmm.
How
are we back on recording?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah. How would we speak to your issue? That, and what would you listen to and what would you be open to? Now, obviously, you're going to be living a huge defense. You've created a defense mechanism right away. Most people who get into those situations have to create an image or a narrative that will defend them and be safe. If they know they're guilty, how are you going to hide that guilt? How are you going to protect yourself from deeper wounds? So what's going to speak and penetrate those walls of defensiveness?
You have to come down to Arnold's level. You have to understand where he's at, what he's feeling, mm-hmm. and truly empathize with him. Mm-hmm. And once he feels that from you, I think he'd be more willing to talk and listen to you because he feels that you understand where he is. Mm-hmm. Not that it's okay, but you would just understand.
Feel safe.
Yeah, yeah. Feel safe.
I agree, Dave.
Have to develop before you go in for his jugular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You know, Dave, I remember back when you, Dave, when you were going through the pandemic issue with work and they were going to lay you off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I heard you were scared. You guys together were scared. It was your income, your future. And what, you know, and did we lift you up? Did we encourage you? Did, you know, were we doing what Paul was saying there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that.
Yes.
Or in my case, you know, this doggone surgery and stuff like that. Well, yeah, it's trying, but I'm really asking the question where we started. What is our responsibility to each other? You know, for those that God has somehow laid into our path that we interact with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dennis, you brought up the thing with Drifter that is on our call, that he reached out and made some contact with me. Well, what is my responsibility in that case to that? So these are all just questions I have.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Why would we even...
Beth,
go ahead.
Oh, Beth, I want to throw a question out to you. You attended a number of women's Bible studies.
Yes.
Did women ever talk about holding each other accountable?
I don't think so. I don't recall any kind of, no.
Yeah, see, this was a mistake. And, you know, Arnold, this kind of maybe in a roundabout way is going to address part of your question about what's our responsibility. The mistake we made in men's groups was we're going to hold each other accountable, okay? Which is almost a legalistic way of saying, I've got my eyes on you, and if you do anything wrong, you're going to have to answer to me. And I think all it did, Dennis, you can tell me if you came across the same problem, all it did was make men lie to each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it brought out resentment, too, because now someone is holding a person accountable, both in private and perhaps in front of other friends.
Exactly.
And the reaction is, well, why do you think? Which one of you is so righteous? You have to tell me I have to stop drinking or something. Or
absolutely. What gives me the right to hold anybody accountable?
Yeah. It was a flawed system. And Dave, you're right. It perpetuated more dysfunction than it was intended. And we told men not to be posers, but in fact, that system actually created more posing, more lying, more deceit, and never really got to the issue of helping men understand who they really are. I'm just holding you to a set of laws and standards, but I wasn't helping that other person understand, wait a minute, what I'm really trying to do is restore you and not tear you down and make you change. You know that, that whole system. Again,
and accountability. Accountability comes through true friendship, true relationship.
Yes.
Because I would have young college men call me and confess things to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that I wanted them to. Mm-hmm. It's just that we had that relationship to where they were comfortable enough to call me and talk to me.
There you go.
And they knew I wasn't going to beat them up for whatever they were talking to me about.
Exactly. A true environment of love, a relationship, a connection of love. And see that verse again, the whole context. Now, being true in love, we should be making all grow into him. In love, if it's not in love, okay. And what does that love look like? Me respecting and holding you in more regard than my own self.
Arnold, I really like that you're trying to make it more practical.
Mm-hmm.
How do we apply everything in a practical way? And I think it makes us think more. And I think we don't know the answers, but just posing the question just gets us thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I think Andy and Chrissy would say the same. They really want to know some, you know, how can we apply this practically, the stuff that we're learning? So good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, listen, I am going to be vacant for the next 3 weeks. But David Fulton has agreed to step in and has set up his own technology.
Oh, good. Thank you, David.
Trying to set up my own technology.
Yeah, right.
Technology and I don't necessarily get along. We don't see eye to eye. But anyway.
We're going to.
I'm working on it.
Yeah. We're going to work on some more of that this afternoon. So you should this week.
You got to keep a good attitude about it, David.
There you go.
You know, it's technology.
This week, hopefully, if everything goes well, and I'm sure it will, you'll get a message from David with the link, his link, to join him at the same hour for the conversation. I will pick it up by recording. And watch and see what you guys. I'll be very interested to see how the conversation goes.
They're hold us accountable, huh?
You're right. Yeah. So see what. I actually hope you guys just have a great time. You know.
Once a pastor, always a pastor.
What oh, it's so hard. So
well, thank you, David. Thank you for doing this.
I appreciate it stepping up and doing the Zoom. Unfortunately, it does require a little bit of technical. But once you set it up, it's pretty easy. So again, have a great next 3 weeks. I'll shoot you a message or myself or let you know. We're in case most of you don't know, we're headed back to Tennessee for 3 weeks. So enjoy some country music, see some more of Tennessee, and be back. I'll be rejoining you on I'm not sure. It's that third Sunday in May. But, okay.
Mm. All right. Well, I want a picture of all the different whiskeys you sample.
Yeah.
Oops, I'm sorry. Is this still being recorded?
Let's see.
Oh, whatever.
Let's sign off. Okay. Let me officially sign off. It's been, a great time to have a conversation, adjusting each other.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys. Have a great week.
Okay. Bye-bye.